Welcome to On Social Health and Change, brought to you by Adler University. I'm your host, Hannah Stanley, and today we're talking about LGBTQ advocacy. In our first segment, we'll talk about the implications for a recent federal report officially condemning the practice of conversion therapy. Later on, we'll discuss what it means to be an ally in the LGBTQ community and how to raise transgender kids. With us currently is Josh Wolf, a professor of psychology at Adler. His research interests focus on the intersection of religion, spirituality, sexual orientation, and gender identity. And before we get started with Josh, I want to take a moment to remind you to hit subscribe so you don't miss a moment of this podcast. Josh, thanks so much for coming in.
Hi, Hannah. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Now, tell us about this new report, because I understand you had a big big role in creating it.
Sure. Well, I had a role in creating it. And what the report was it was released in the by SAMHSA, which is the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration. They're an agency within the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I was part of a team of 13 mental health professionals who brought together research, clinical experience, and professional expertise from various disciplines, including psychology, psychiatry, and social work. And the reason that SAMHSA started working on this report was about a year ago, President Obama put out a statement from the White House condemning the use of conversion therapy, especially condemning it in the use of minors, children, and adolescents. And so as a result, it spurred a lot of movement and momentum within the federal government, within agencies, as well as professional organizations like the American Psychological Association, who actually hosted us for this working panel and helped facilitate this coming together. So over the period of several months, we reviewed research studies, discussed clinical experiences in working with LGBTQ youth, and I'm proud to say SAMHSA, with our input, issued a fairly strong report that pointed to evidence showing that conversion therapy is harmful, not appropriate for use in children and adolescents, and really does not have a place in professional psychology and counseling.
I feel that we would be doing a disservice if we didn't explain kind of just sort of an overview of what conversion therapy really is.
Sure. Good question. So the goal of conversion therapy is really to change someone's sexual orientation or gender identity. It's an express intent from a mental health or mental health professional to do that. So, for example, if individual who has attraction, is sexually attracted towards members of the same gender, if they were to seek out conversion therapy, it would be to try and change that, to make themselves heterosexual, is the goal of conversion therapy. Now, as I said earlier, the evidence is overwhelming that this doesn't work and is actually harmful. But this is something that's still happening today with mental health professionals, with what I call sort of para-professional organizations that aren't necessarily regulated by licensing boards or by professional organizations, as well as in religious faith-based communities that are not affirming toward lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, queer identities within individuals in their denominations or congregations.
You come to this topic from a very personal place, and I'd like to ask you to share your story.
Sure. So I grew up in as an evangelical Christian, and that's really an important part of my identity, and I think had many positive experiences and who I am today. But one of the things that, you know, I heard growing up, you know, I didn't always necessarily hear it, but somehow knew that I would not be fully accepted as a gay man in my faith community, and that it would be viewed as sinful and wrong, displeasing to God to be gay. And that was something I carried for a very long time, and was a, I think something, you know, I had a, was painful, had a lot of shame about. And I really believe that if I just kept praying hard enough, if I was a good enough Christian and did all the right things, that I could, that God would somehow change my sexual orientation to be attracted to women or to be heterosexual. And one of the ways that I thought I could do that would actually be through conversion therapy. So I actually saw a psychologist for about a year and a half, working on trying to make me straight or no longer make me gay. And there's some very vivid memories I have from that, such as you know, my very first session with him, I pointedly asked, is this something you can help me with? And his response being, yes, I have worked with gay clients who have changed their sexual attractions, and I believe that is something that I can do with you. And this came from a licensed clinical psychologist. And at that point in my life, it was just something I just desperately wanted, and kind of hung on every word that this is going to work for me. And here's someone that is well-educated, licensed, someone I, you know, am trusting, is telling me this over and over again for, you know, well over a year. I kept believing that until later, when things started to change for me. Not my sexual orientation didn't change. I was still exclusively attracted to men after being in this therapy for over a year and a half. And that's when I started to wonder, is this really helping me? And more doubts began to surface, particularly starting to think, this isn't helping me. I actually believe I started to get more depressed because I was spending all this time, all this money, all this energy, and then thinking, why is it not working? Maybe, is it me? Is it my fault that it's not working? I discontinued therapy. I ended it against my therapist's recommendations, who very adamantly insisted I was ending therapy prematurely, needed to continue. We hadn't done enough. He insisted if I kept going deeper into my issues, it would make me straight. But I really feel fortunate that I, you know, listened to my gut feeling that this was not healthy, and this was actually quite harmful, and discontinued seeing this person.
So based on the story that you just shared with us, tell us why. Very sorry. Tell us why you feel this report is so very important.
Well, I think it's important for a lot of reasons. And as I alluded to earlier, when you have the president of the United States coming out in support or against something, that carries a lot of weight. I think that this really energized a movement that had already been underway, but sort of kickstarted it to build momentum, to make sure that individuals can be protected against this practice, particularly individuals like minors, individuals under 18 who can be coerced, forced into these practices by parents, legal guardians, do not have the same protections under the law. They need an added layer of protection, which I think this report is something that can do. It's also another vehicle to illustrate some of the research on this topic that is really alarming. So, you know, as I said earlier, not only does conversion therapy not work, there's evidence that it can actively harm people who undergo it. That can include increased rates of depression, substance abuse, as well as thoughts of suicide or suicide attempts when conversion therapy is not successful for individuals who seek it.
Especially with someone like yourself who sought it out on their own, mm-hmm. desperately wanted yep. the result that you were trying to achieve, and then became more depressed as you realized you mm-hmm. weren't going to get that point.
Exactly. And thinking, well, again, was it my fault? Or does that mean this will never change? And, will God ever accept me, or whatever an individual's higher power might be? Will my family ever be able to accept me? Does that mean that I have to live the rest of my life in celibacy and alone? I mean, I think these are all possible thoughts that might go through someone's head when they really believe this is going to work for them and help them, and it doesn't.
Also important, in my opinion, is the fact that this report allows it, it's publicized, it's published, mm-hmm. it's out there, people can Google it. Mm-hmm. So if someone is considering this yep. and they do any sort of research, this is going to be something that they can read, that's documentable, yep. that's cited.
Yeah, and it's actually free, downloadable to the public. I encourage listeners to visit www.samhsa.gov.
Which is SAMHSA.
SAMHSA.
Aha, see.
There's a hidden H in
there's
there.
There's a hidden silent H.
and again, you know, when you have a formal government document, it's been highly vetted to get to that level. Certainly our government's not perfect, but the federal government cannot just haphazardly release scientific and policy documents without going through numerous levels of clearance. And I think that adds, again, a significant amount of credibility to this report. It also creates a directive and policy recommendations and ideas for other states to follow. Right now, only 4 states, Illinois being one of them, as well as California, New Jersey, and Oregon, as well as the District of Columbia, have banned the use of conversion therapy with minors. New York has also taken some executive actions from the governor to make this much harder to get. So the report really provides resources for states, other government entities. One of the things the report did was called upon more research on how to protect LGBTQ youth. What are various risk factors that may explain how a LGBTQ youth ends up in conversion therapy, as well as how do we do better messaging to parents and legal guardians to keep kids out of those kind of treatments.
You mentioned that there are states where conversion therapy is illegal.
Mm-hmm.
Who does that cover? Is that just licensed therapists?
That's one of the criticisms of these laws, is those laws typically only cover licensed mental health professionals. Psychiatrists, psychologists, social workers, professional counselors.
Somebody who has to pass a board or
exactly,
report back in.
And is already held to high standards within their profession and state licensing board. And there's already a certain level of oversight if someone steps out of bounds with what is accepted in their professional licensing mm-hmm. board or organization. Going to see a pastoral counselor in some states may not have the same oversight. Now I'm not at all saying that all pastoral counselors are advocating conversion therapy, but at the same time, when we talk about this happening in conversion therapy getaway camps or religious ministries or clergy members, LGBTQ youth lose some of the legal protections that they have if they were going to see a licensed mental health professional.
And is that because of a freedom of religion protection or envelope?
Yeah. I think that's a a complicated legal question and debate that's happening right now is this, where's the line between where the government allows for freedom of religion and also
protects the mental health of the youth.
And if I can make an analogy with this, and I think it's appropriate because I believe that it is this strong, is, you know, as a society, we have decided we do not protect anyone on the basis of religious freedom when it comes to child abuse, whether that's physical, emotional role you are in, no matter what role you are in. I raise that because the evidence is overwhelming that this is harmful, potentially coercive, abusive. I think we're having to relook at these laws and say, have we done enough to protect children who end up in this situation?
So for the states that are considering this, where are we? We have four that have banned it. District of Columbia is on board. Mm-hmm. And we, as a nation, mm-hmm. I'm saying, who is considering it? Where are we at as a country that
way? So several more states have considered it. I think this is something you're going to see popping up in various legislatures this year. My guess is we'll have 2 to 3, maybe more, added by the end of this year. There's also legislation that's been introduced in Congress to make it actually consumer fraud to tell an individual or family that you can change their sexual orientation or gender identity.
Because there's money being exchanged.
Exactly. Yep. And a billable service is being presented, or a fee exchanged. It'd be the same thing if someone offered you a loan that they knew was bad. They would be subject to prosecution under fraud charges. And again, I think that this legislation to say this is not different. If someone promises you something that is shown to be ineffective and harmful, you are accountable under the law for that. I think that the reality is that legislation has multiple hurdles it will encounter in the current Congress, and something we need to be realistic about. But there are efforts both at the state level as well as the federal level to do more to protect LGBTQ youth against conversion therapy.
Against conversion therapy, mm-hmm. which is what we've been discussing during this segment. Thank you so much, Josh,
sure.
for not only sharing a very incredibly personal story, but allowing us to learn from your experience and your involvement and expertise on this topic. When we come back, we're going to talk about how to create an inclusive environment for LGBT community, for LGBT people in general. Hannah Stanley here. This is On Social Health and Change, brought to you by Adler University. And again, just take a moment to hit subscribe so you don't miss a moment of this fine podcast.